Miss Kenton and my father had arrived at the house at more or less the same time. This is to say, the spring of 1922, as a consequence of my losing at one stroke the previous housekeeper and under-butler. This had occurred due to these latter two persons deciding to marry one another and leave the profession. I have always found such liaisons a serious threat to the order in a house. But let me say immediately, I do not have Miss Kenton in mind at all when I say this. Of course, she too eventually left my staff to get married, but I can vouch that during the time she worked as housekeeper under me, she was nothing less than dedicated and never allowed her professional priorities to be distracted. But I am digressing. I was explaining that we had fallen in need of a housekeeper and an under-butler at one and the same time, and Miss Kenton had arrived to take up the former post. As it happened, my father had around this time come to the end of his distinguished service at Loughborough House with the death of his employer, Mr. John Silvers, and had been at something of a loss for work and accommodation. Although he was still a professional of the highest class, he was now in his 70s, and much ravaged by arthritis and other ailments. In view of this, it seemed a reasonable solution to ask my father to bring his great experience and distinction to Darlington Hall. As I remember, it was one morning a little while after my father and Miss Kenton had joined the staff. I had been in my pantry going through my paperwork when I heard a knock on my door. I was a little taken aback when Miss Kenton opened the door and entered before I had bidden her to do so. She came in, holding a large vase of flowers, and said with a smile, "Mr. Stevens, I thought these would brighten your parlour a little." "Miss Kenton, I appreciate your kindness, but this is not a room of entertainment. I am happy to have distractions kept to a minimum." "But surely, Mr. Stevens, there is no need to keep your room so stark and bereft of colour." "It has served me perfectly well thus far, Miss Kenton, though I appreciate your thoughts. Oh, in fact, since you are here, there was a certain matter I wish to raise with you."
"Oh, really, Mr. Stevens?"
"Yes, Miss Kenton. I happened to be walking past the kitchen yesterday when I heard you calling to someone named William."
"Why, Mr. Stevens, I should think I was addressing your father. There are no other Williams in the house, I take it?"
"May I ask you in future, Miss Kenton, to address my father as Mr. Stevens? I'm most grateful, Miss Kenton." To my surprise, Miss Kenton did not take her leave. "Excuse me, Mr. Stevens," she said after a moment. "I have in the past been accustomed to addressing under-servants by their Christian names and saw no reason to do otherwise in this house." "A most understandable error, Miss Kenton. However, if you will consider the situation for a moment, you may come to see the inappropriateness of someone such as yourself talking down to one such as my father."
"You say someone such as myself? But I am, as far as I understand, the housekeeper of this house, while your father is the under-butler."
"I am surprised your powers of observation have not already made it clear to you that he is in reality more than that."
"Oh, no doubt I have been extremely unobservant, Mr. Stevens. It must indeed have been most galling for him to be so addressed by one such as I."
"Miss Kenton, it is clear from your tone you simply have not observed my father. If you had done so, the inappropriateness of someone of your age and standing addressing him as William should have been self-evident to you."
"I am most indebted to you for your advice, Mr. Stevens. So do please tell me, just what marvellous things might I learn from observing your father?"
"Miss Kenton, if you are under the impression you have already at your age perfected yourself, you will never rise to the heights you are no doubt capable of." Not more than a week later, I was coming down the back corridor from the kitchen when Miss Kenton came out of her parlour and uttered the statement she had clearly been rehearsing. This was something to the effect that, although she felt most uncomfortable drawing my attention to errors made by my staff, she and I had to work as a team. She then went on to point out that several pieces of silver had been laid out for the dining room, which bore clear remains of polish. It had been unnecessary, of course, for her to mention that the silver was one of my father's main responsibilities, and one he took great pride in. It is very possible there were a number of other instances of this sort which I have now forgotten. I recall things reaching something of a climax one afternoon when I was in the billiard room, attending to Lord Darlington's sporting trophies. Miss Kenton had entered and said from the door, "Mr. Stevens, I have just noticed something outside which puzzles me."
What is that, Miss Kimpton? Was it his lordship's wish that the Chinaman on the upstairs landing should be exchanged with the one outside this door? Oh, I fear, Miss Kimpton, that you are a little confused. I do not believe I am confused at all, Mr. Stevenson. The Chinamen, I would suppose, were polished by someone, then replaced incorrectly. Perhaps you will care to step outside this door and observe for yourself. Oh, Miss Kenton, I am busy just now and will attend to the matter shortly. I turned back to my business, but Miss Kenton remained in the doorway observing me. Eventually, she said, I can see you will be finished very shortly, Mr. Stevens. I will await you outside so that this matter may be finalized when you come out. Sure enough, as I continued with my work, an occasional footstep would serve to remind me she was still there outside the door. Eventually, I decided the best strategy would be simply to stride out of the room very suddenly at a furious pace. I thus succeeded in propelling myself through the doorway and several paces down the corridor before a somewhat astonished Miss Kenton could recover her wits. This she did rather rapidly, and the next moment I found she had overtaken me and was standing before me, effectively barring my way. Mr. Stevens, that is the incorrect Chinaman, would you not agree? Miss Kenton, I would ask you to keep your voice down. The fact is, Mr. Stevens, all the Chinamen in this house have been dirty for some time, and now they are in incorrect positions. I must say I am at some loss as to why you should be so concerned with these most trivial of errors. These errors may be trivial in themselves, Mr. Stevens, but you must yourself realize their larger significance. The fact is, your father is entrusted with far more than a man of his age can cope with. It will not be long before your father commits an error of major proportions. But now that I think further about it, I am not sure Miss Kenton spoke quite so boldly that day. I am not sure she could actually have gone so far as to say things like, these errors may be trivial in themselves, but you must yourself realize their larger significance. In fact, I have a feeling it may have been Lord Darlington himself who made that particular remark to me some 2 months after that exchange with Miss Kenton. By that time, the situation as regards my father had changed significantly following his fall. On the particular afternoon to which I am referring, Lord Darlington barely glanced up from his volume as he asked, Your father feeling better now, Stevens? I am glad to say he has made a full recovery, sir. Now look here, Stevens. Have there been any, signs at all? I mean, signs to tell us your father may be wishing his burden lightened somewhat, apart from the business of him falling, I mean. As I say, sir, my father appears to have made a full recovery. Look here, Stevens. The first of the delegates will be arriving here in less than a fortnight. What happens within this house after that may have considerable repercussions. Yes, sir. Now, look here, Stevens. There's no question of your father leaving us. You're simply being asked to reconsider his duties. And it was then, I believe, that his lordship said, These errors may be trivial in themselves, Stevens, but you must yourself realize their larger significance. He must not be asked to perform tasks in any area where an error might jeopardize the success of our forthcoming conference. Lord Darlington had actually witnessed my father's fall a week earlier. His lordship had been entertaining 2 guests in the summer house and had watched my father's approach across the lawn bearing a tray of refreshments. The lawn climbs a slope in front of the summer house, and 4 flagstones embedded into the grass served as steps. It was in the vicinity of these steps that my father fell, scattering the load on his tray across the grass. By the time I had gone out, his lordship and his guests had laid my father on his side, a cushion and a rug from the summer house serving as pillow and blanket. My father was unconscious, and his face looked an oddly grey colour. By the time Dr. Meredith arrived, he had revived considerably, and the doctor soon left again, making only vague statements to the effect that my father had perhaps been overworking. The whole episode was clearly a great embarrassment to my father. The question of how one could broach the topic of reducing his responsibilities was not then an easy one. My difficulty was further compounded by the fact that for some years my father and I had tended to converse less and less. In the end, I judged the best option to be to talk in the privacy of his room. I had rarely had reason to enter my father's room prior to this occasion, and I was newly struck by the smallness and starkness of it. Indeed, I recall my impression at the time was of having stepped into a prison cell. My father had opened his curtains and was sitting in full uniform on the edge of his bed, from where evidently he had been watching the sky turn to dawn. "Ah," I said, and gave a short laugh. I might have known father would be up and ready for the day.
"I've been up for the past 3 hours," he said,
looking me up and down rather coldly. "I have come here to relate something to you, father."
"Then relate it briefly and concisely."
"Very well. The fact is, father has become increasingly infirm." My father's face in the half-light betrayed no emotion whatsoever. "Principally," I continued, "it has been felt that father should no longer be asked to wait at table, whether or not guests are present."
"I have waited at table every day for the last 54 years, my father remarked, his voice perfectly unhurried.
"Furthermore, it has been decided that father should not carry laden trays of any sort for even the shortest distances. I have listed here the revised round of duties he will from now on be expected to perform." I felt disinclined, actually, to hand him the piece of paper I was holding, and so put it down on the end of his bed. My father glanced at it, then returned his gaze to me.
"I only fell that time because of those steps. They're crooked."
"Indeed. In any case, may I be assured father will study that sheet?"
"Seamus should be told to put those steps right."
That summer evening referred to by Miss Kenton in her letter came very soon after that encounter. Indeed, it may have been the evening of that same day. My father could be seen standing by those 4 stone steps, deep in thought. Then he walked very slowly up the steps. At the top he turned and came back down a little faster. Turning once more, my father became still again for several seconds, contemplating the steps before him. Eventually, he climbed them a second time, very deliberately. This time he continued on across the grass until he had almost reached the summer house, then turned and came walking slowly back, his eyes never leaving the ground. In fact, I can describe his manner at that moment no better than the way Miss Kenton puts it in her letter. It was indeed as though he hoped to find some precious jewel he had dropped there. Now, it strikes me I may have given the impression that I treated him rather bluntly over his declining abilities. The fact is, there was little choice but to approach the matter as I did. The important international conference to take place at Darlington Hall was by then looming ahead of us, leaving little room for indulgence. In fact, I often look back to that conference. For one thing, I suppose I do regard it as the moment in my career when I truly came of age as a butler. That is to say, I consider I became a great butler. It was one of those events which, at a crucial stage in one's development, arrive to challenge and stretch one to the limit of one's ability and beyond, so that thereafter one has new standards by which to judge oneself.